From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Ever wonder how your favorite authors got started? For some, their creative journeys began with short stories and drawings. Author Alyssa Brent Weissman tells us about her new collection from 26 writers of young adult books titled Our Story Begins. Your favorite authors and illustrators share fun, inspiring, and occasionally ridiculous things they wrote and drew as kids. Weissman sees a message for young writers.
There's no one right way, and what works for one person might not work for another. And the only thing that binds all of them together, I think, is just you can kind of see the passion there, that people were having fun creating this.
Plus, librarian Jamie Watson shares titles you probably enjoyed as a kid and can share with young readers. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. When we pick up a book or open it on a screen, most of us hold at least a minimal assumption that the person who wrote it is worth reading, probably knows what they're doing, maybe has done it before. We may not ask, how did they get started? That's the question award-winning novelist Alyssa Brent Weissman asked about a particular type of author. People who, like her, write for young readers. The result is her newest book. She's the editor of Our Story Begins. Your favorite authors and illustrators share fun, inspiring, and occasionally ridiculous things they wrote and drew as kids. Alyssa Brent Weissman is with me in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is this book?
Well, this book is an anthology, so it's a collection of works by 26 different authors and illustrators who are very well-known and successful in children's literature. And it's a collection of original stories and art that they created when they were kids themselves. So each section features a different author, and each author illustrator wrote a short memoir about him or herself as a young reader or writer, and then includes, most of the time, original scans, handwritten or drawings where you can even see eraser marks of a story or poem or piece of art or journal entry that they created when they were their reader's age.
How did you put this together?
Well, I had the idea when I was in the house where I grew up going through some boxes in the basement, and I found a box that was completely filled with stories that I wrote when I was a kid, including the beginning of a novel that I wrote in fifth grade and tried unsuccessfully to get published. And I thought about how now, as a published author, I go into schools a lot and talk to kids and tell them that story about trying to get published when I was a kid. And a lot of them ask if they can read that story. And here it was in this box in my basement. And I thought, you know, I can't be the only one with a box like this in a basement. And how cool would it be to see what some of my favorite authors and some of the most successful authors and illustrators were creating when they were kids? And so I reached out to other authors and illustrators, starting with some that I knew personally. And then once it seemed like this idea had some legs, reaching out to others who I didn't know personally, but really admire or were hoping to get into the book, and was able to speak to them about their childhood and see if they had anything saved that they could send me for the book.
I'm struck by the talent of these young people reflected in this book, but also the range of self-confidence. Gordon Corman, who has written 80 books for kids and teens, including Slacker, Jingle, and the Mastermind series, he seemed really self-confident.
Almost too confident, I would say. Although he had reason to be confident when he was a kid. He was one of my favorite authors when I was growing up, not just because I liked his books, but because I knew a cool story about him, which was that he published his first book when he was only 13 years old. And so I guess that self-confidence and talent translated itself into a book deal at a young age. And that
and
was
you
very...
have a picture of him signing that contract at age 13.
I do. He gave me a picture of him signing his first book contract when he's 13 years old, and it's here in this book.
And sort of at the other end of the self-confidence spectrum, very vulnerable essay in the book, by Yuji Morales. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yuji Morales.
Yuji Morales, who grew up in Mexico. Tell us about her.
Yes. So she is a wonderful award-winning illustrator who now splits her time between the United States and Mexico. And she, her essay is almost heartbreaking, really. It seems like a very different childhood that she had than many people experience. I would at least like to hope here in America, where, you know, many of the authors and illustrators talk about their parents and teachers being very encouraging of them writing and inspiring them and telling them to continue. And Yuji had the opposite experience. School was very difficult. She was convinced that she was not a good student, that she had no talent. And she talks about creating her first painting, and she was very excited to be able to do this in an art class in junior high. And the teacher essentially accuses her of copying the painting or of having someone else create it for her. And she talks about how she's not sure about how the whole thing played out, and it would be many, many years later that she would, you know, take to art again and realize, I think, as she says, that art is her life. But we have that painting along with the story, which is really very moving.
And she talks about how she wishes she could talk to that young girl who was her.
That's right. And she says, I would come up behind her while she was crying on the sidewalk and say, just wait, Yuji. You have no idea the things you'll accomplish one day.
That's Alyssa Brent Weissman, author of 5 award-winning novels for readers ages 8 to 12. Here on The Record on WYPR, we're discussing a book she edited, just published, Our Story Begins. Your favorite authors and illustrators share fun, inspiring, and occasionally ridiculous things they wrote and drew as kids. Was it a conscious decision to include drawings as well as early writings?
It was. I thought that it would break up the book really nicely to have a visual aspect to it as well. And there's, you know, in children's literature, many people are both authors and illustrators. I am not one of those people. You would not want to see my childhood art or my art from today. But I thought that it would be a really nice way. And a lot of them really went hand in hand. So people who we think of today as being known for their writing, someone like the author R.J. Palacio, author of the best-selling book Wonder, that's about to become a major movie. She actually sent me a poem that she wrote along with drawings and talks about how writing and art always went hand in hand for her, and she was an artist before she was a writer.
And most of the work in the book, especially, I think the written work is really good, but I must say I was not impressed with Tom Engelberger's fiction effort at age 12, Yodium. And he says as much. He says in his essay, quote, why did I write bad encyclopedia entries when I was a kid? What's the story there?
So Tom Engelberger is best known today for the Origami Yoda series. And he's a very, very funny writer. When I was talking to him, originally he told me he was hoping to find some comics he created as a kid called Snail Cowboy, which I think would have been wonderful to see.
Snail Cowboy.
Right, but he wasn't able to find those. And I'll never forget the email he sent me when he did find something. He said, hit pay dirt cleaning out my office, found pages upon pages of horrible world building. And so he has a notebook that's in here for a world he was creating called Yodium that I guess he was planning to turn into some sort of epic novel, but all it is, as he says, are really boring encyclopedia entries. So he has things like the land of Lipnia has 12 elected leaders and primarily exports grain and things like that. And he uses it in his essay before you can read the actual Yodium, which he tells you are welcome to skip most of it. So he talks about how as he grew up, he learned that, you know, you can't blah, blah, blah all the time. You have to actually tell a story.
Well, unlike my reaction to his entry, your entry, which is titled New School Year Blues, I found that very readable and interesting. How old were you?
I was 10 or 11 when I wrote that. And thank you very much. I think it's pretty good for something that a fifth grader wrote. Unfortunately, none of the 10 New York publishing houses that I sent it to were interested in publishing it at the time. But actually, as I tell kids today, I'm very glad that none of them wanted to publish it because it might still be out there as a book with my name on it. And I'd much rather have it in a book like this with my name on it.
So you were sending off self-addressed stamped envelopes to 10 publishers. What did your parents think of this effort?
Oh, they encouraged me to no end. They bought me a computer for my 11th birthday so that I could type up my stories. And we were one of the very first families to get on the internet on Prodigy, with the sole reason being that Anne M. Martin, the author of the Babysitter's Club books, had like a portal on there where you could communicate with her. You could basically email Anne Martin. And I wanted to do that desperately. And my parents, you know, kind of went along with the whole early internet thing so that I could communicate with an author who inspired me.
You mentioned all the, you mentioned Tom Engelberger creating this notebook of this world he was creating. I think it was Rita Williams Garcia writes about filling 39 notebooks.
Oh, yes.
Of stories from her middle school.
That's right. She had me beat for sure. I was a big writer. She was even bigger. Rita Williams Garcia, whose new book, Clayton Bird Goes Underground, is just shortlisted for the National Book Award. And she was determined to be a published writer. She said she tried to write about 1,000 words a night, and she would draw a little stop sign in the corner of a page of her notebook to stop herself from writing even more. And you can see one of those stop signs in her handwritten page. And she was chronicling her junior high, middle school years, or maybe her upper elementary school years, from when she lived in Seaside, California, and trying to capture all of that. And it's interesting to read now because she's African American, and this was in the 1970s. And the story that she has in here from that notebook is actually kind of this playground showdown between mm-hmm. her school and a predominantly white school and a four square court.
It's a very interesting story. And again, it sounds, it's much more sophisticated than I would expect someone of that age writing. Is that a lesson from these essays, that kind of obsessive attention to filling 39 notebooks? Is that what you need to do to be a good author?
I think it worked for Rita Williams Garcia, for sure, although she didn't get published until much later. But I think what I was worried, actually, when I first started this project, that everybody's piece would be like that, or like the author and illustrator Grace Lynn, who has this absolutely gorgeous book that she created when she was in seventh grade with these beautiful illustrations here, that everybody would be so precocious that it might actually be discouraging to kids reading it today, who would think, you know, well, I'm 10 or I'm 11 and I don't have nearly this much talent right now. I guess I shouldn't even bother trying this. But actually, things like Tom and Yodium and many other pieces in the book are much more true to representative of the grade and age at the time, or even, you know, Tom says himself it's not very good. There's a really wide range. And I think that it ends up being very, very encouraging to see that there's no one right way. And what works for one person might not work for another. And the only thing that binds all of them together, I think, is just you can kind of see the passion there, that people were having fun creating this.
Tell us about Phyllis Reynolds Naylor, who lives in Gaithersburg. She writes that when she was growing up in the Depression, they didn't have paper she could use. She could only write her stories on paper that had already been used on one side.
That's right. Yes, that would have been wasteful to use a piece of paper for a story back then. So her story, which is called The Food Fairies, she created it when she was about 10, and it's about all the food in the refrigerator going to war, is all written on, I think it's used church stationery that you can see in the paper itself. And she has wonderful drawings as well that she drew, and it's just a little slice of time as well, because of the way that she draws the refrigerator and the way you see the woman who lives there. You see that her skirt and her legs and her high heels, and it looks like something straight out of the 1930s.
All of your authors, I think, had a story or picture or both that you could copy for the book, except one, Thanh Ha Lai, born in Vietnam. Tell us about her and what she entered.
Yes. So Thanh Ha is the author of a number of books that are written in almost a prose poem kind of style. And she grew up in Vietnam. And as she says, she had to leave Vietnam in a hurry when the war began. And so she doesn't have any physical memories of her childhood. She does have a childhood photo that's in here, and she's in about she's probably about 5 or 6 years old in the photo. But she says in her essay, you know, I realized I didn't need tangible objects. I had my memories. And she says growing up, her mother was a house poet, is the term she used, that she would just recite poetry around the house and make up poems just for herself. And then she and her mother together would make up stories, and she would make up stories to tell to her mother. And so she remembered one of those stories and wrote it down now as an adult. And that story is here in this book.
The last page in the book is headlined, The next story is yours. How will it begin? What do you want kids to take from that?
I had even said at one point, can we put some blank pages at the end of this book just so that kids can read this and feel inspired and go ahead and create something of their own? There is actually a place for child readers to put their own picture and hopefully add their own stories. And it's got some tips, too, from each of from the chapters, main takeaways that you can use. But I really hope that, you know, I think that everyone has a story inside, and you never know where your story is going to go. And so I dedicate the book to, you know, every kid with a story inside and all of the grown-ups who give that kid a pencil and tell them to begin.
Well, thanks for sharing it. It is a fun book. A beautiful book.
Thank you very much.
Alyssa Brent Weissman teaches creative writing classes in the Johns Hopkins Odyssey program and has written 5 award-winning novels for readers ages 8 to 12. She's the editor of her latest book, just published, titled Our Story Begins. Your favorite authors and illustrators share fun, inspiring, and occasionally ridiculous things they wrote and drew as kids. Alyssa Weissman and several other local authors will discuss their books on Saturday, this coming Saturday, 11 a.m., at the Barnes & Noble in Ellicott City. We have information about that event and the book at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Short break, and then we'll trek down memory lane to remember some best-loved children's books. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Are there books you read as a kid that stuck with you? Is there a series you devoured, eagerly anticipating the newest edition? We turn now to beloved but perhaps forgotten titles. From silly poetry to spooky young adult fiction, these stories have withstood the test of time and make for great reading today. Jamie Watson is the Collection Development Coordinator for the Baltimore County Public Library, and she's with me in the studio to share her picks of forgotten favorites for readers young and old. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks for inviting us.
How did you create this list?
I tapped into my wide swath of friends and professional colleagues all across the country. So parents of all ages, with kids from babies to teenagers, and just asked them the question, tell me some things that you read that then you shared with your kids. And, oh, I had so much fun putting it together. I could probably do this for 3 hours with all the response I got from people.
Yeah, we're really getting the top picks here. Let's dive into your recommendations. Lots of little ones are obsessed with cars, trains, and planes, and this title has bright illustrations of all kinds of modes of transportation. Richard Scarry's Cars and Trucks and Things That Go. Why is this on the list?
Richard Scarry was one of my favorites, so, you know, full disclosure, but this is one of his most popular, but he has many, and they're all very similar with The Busy Town and Lowly Worm, and all his little characters are animals and they're community helpers. And they hold up to multiple readings. They're so full of detail. A child can sit down and hunt for the worm in each picture, the car in each picture, the truck in each picture. They're really still one of the most popular for emerging readers. They always have the little word right under the, here's a truck and here's a fireman, and allowing children to learn how to read in a way that almost nothing has surpassed in the 60-some years since it came out.
Another book with a bright and beautiful, slightly abstract illustrations is The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats.
That one came out in 1963, and it won the Caldecott Medal. It was one of the very first books to ever depict a child of color in publishing. One of the things when we put lists together, we're always trying to think of diversity. But in a list like this, it's difficult because when many of us were children, there were not any or very, very few books that depicted children of color. So in 1963, Ezra Jack Keats, who was himself a white man, wrote a book about a contemporary African-American child. And it's just timeless because it's literally about a snowy day. Kids still like to think about getting up and having it be a snow day, even today. It's in the news right now because Peter, the main character, is on the latest stamp that's come out from the U.S. Postal Service. So even the Postal Service still loves Peter on a snowy day.
And next up is a collection of poems with titles such as How Not to Have to Dry the Dishes, Prayer of the Selfish Child, and Who Ordered the Broiled Face?
Shel Silverstein has so many collections of books and silly poetry, some of them for adults, but he's most known for his books for kids. And A Light in the Attic is probably one of the best known books of his witty, quick, humorous, pun-filled poems. He's got a brand new book out, too, of things that were unpublished before he passed away called Runny Babbitt Returns, which probably tells you all you wanted to know. And if you didn't know this, Shel Silverstein wrote the Johnny Cash hit A Boy Named Sue.
I did not know that.
So he has a whole other life besides just being a poet for kids.
And kids like puns.
Oh, one of my suggestors, I actually wrote this down word for word. Goofy, clever puns are always a hit with a silly 9-year-old boy.
That's interesting to me about how a kid's brain is picking up parallel sounds that don't mean the same thing and why that's funny.
Yeah, wordplay and silliness. I think it's the silliness.
Your list includes some treasured series that have been kept alive over the years. One a little spooky, the other about a group of girls who seem like the best friends ever. The last one about an orange cat who loves lasagna. What's all that?
Even adults, we get so excited when the new James Patterson comes out or the new Nora Roberts. Well, kids are exactly the same, and they like their comfort reading, where you kind of know how it's going to go. You just don't know exactly how it's going to go. And I think that's why some of these series have really stood the test of time. Goosebumps started in the late 80s, and they're scary, but not too scary. Kids are never really in any danger. There's been movies, there's been TV shows, and then just recently they just have put them all out again looking exactly like they did in the 80s. The Babysitter's Club is a little bit different. That started just about the same time, and the books are still popular, but they're popular in a different format. They're actually, many of them have been put in the graphic novel format. Some of them even drawn by Raina Telgemeier, who has now come into her own fame with a lot of her own graphic novels, but she got her start doing the Babysitter's Club series. So if you read the Babysitter's Club when you were a child, your daughter can now read them in a comic graphic novel format, a totally of the time format that you didn't have available. And gosh, Garfield. The number of Garfield books in print is something like 70 million. I mean, that little cat has hung around for a long time, 40 years actually.
Really?
And at the library, we buy Garfield books. Stacks and stacks of all the new Garfield books when the old ones become too well-worn and we need to replace them as frequently as we have when I was a brand new librarian 25 years ago. Kids still love, again, that silly comfort of the cat and his lasagna.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Jamie Watson, Collection Development Coordinator for the Baltimore County Public Library. She's sharing titles you may have enjoyed as a child and can pass down to the readers, little readers, young readers in your life. For anyone with a little sister, you have selected Ramona the Pest by Beverly Cleary.
So many Beverly Cleary books were mentioned as I was starting to put this list together. It was hard to choose because she also has The Mouse and the Motorcycle. But Ramona the Pest is the one that I think of. The Ramona Quimby books is the one that I tend to think of. There might be some dated references in this. I mean, it's been around for a long, long time. But kids really haven't changed that much. They still get nervous going to school. They still do dumb things and get embarrassed. They still have friends. They still have big sisters who are bossy and little sisters who are pests. Those things have stayed the same throughout years and years and years. Beverly Cleary is still alive. She is 101 years old. What a treasure.
Isn't that something? 101.
101.
Hats off to her. For fans of science fiction or fantasy, you selected Madeleine L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time.
If it's been a while since you've read this or thought of this, now's the time to get ahead of the game because it's coming out as a movie in March. Oh. Produced by Oprah and directed by Ava DuVernay. It was one of the first true science fiction books for kids that were geared at children. They go through time and place. I think one of the things that also makes A Wrinkle in Time remain popular is it's got kids who have to be smart, who have to bail out the adults. it's like fantasy in two different ways. It's fantasy, but also maybe I get to be the one that solves everything sometimes, that I think it's like a kid's fantasy come true.
Yeah, I can see why kids like that. Finally, a tale of adventure about an enormous piece of fruit, or the story of a girl with telekinesis and her evil principal. The works of Roald Dahl are just as fun to read today.
And one thing that they are really is fun to listen to. I love listening and I love family listening. And so if you've read these books but you haven't visited them in a long time, a good way to revisit them with your young one is to listen to the series that came out a couple of years ago with celebrities reading these stories. And Kate Winslet reads Matilda, and she chews the scenery. She is so evil when she has to be Miss Trunchbull, and she is so delightful when she has to be Matilda. It was a story that I was very familiar with that I couldn't get out of the car until I found out what was going to happen next when I was listening.
And the other I referred to is James and the Giant Peach.
Yes, just another one of Roald Dahl's that's also part of the series. A couple other ones to mention is also The Witches, is read by Miranda Richardson. David Walliams of Little Britain, who's kind of a silly British comic, does the BFG. All of these readers are just perfectly matching with the sensibility of Roald Dahl and what he was trying to get across with his over-the-top humor and silliness.
This has been so much fun. I really am grateful to you for sharing this list with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Jamie Watson, Collection Development Coordinator for the Baltimore County Public Library. Jamie Watson's book picks are posted at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as is information about Saturday's event in Ellicott City with author and editor Alyssa Brent Weissman. We spoke with her about Our Story Begins, her collection of the backstories of dozens of people who write children's books. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow, and happy reading.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.